I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
One size fits all seemed like a good idea for clothes. Nice
dress. It's a t-shirt.
Until you tried it on. Same goes for your healthcare. That's why United Healthcare offers a variety of flexible, budget-friendly coverage for medical, vision, dental, and more. So whether you're between jobs, coming off a parent's plan, or even missed open enrollment, you can find the plan that fits you best. Find out more about United Healthcare coverage at uh1.com. That's uh1.com.
You are very welcome to the Ireland's Birth Stories podcast. My name is Cora Gernon. I created this space for women to share all of the details surrounding their pregnancy, labour, birth and everything in between without feeling shy about the detail. Sit back and enjoy over 100 hours of birth stories told by you, the listeners. Enjoy. Hello there. I hope you've all had a lovely week. I'm just going to mention the event that I keep talking about over on Instagram. So basically it's a reason for us all to get together and listen to birth stories live. So I'll be interviewing a couple of my past guests and new guests about my past guests about their subsequent births. They've since given birth to little babies and I really want to share their stories. One of them was a really traumatic experience first time around, and her second birth experience was so much more positive. So I really wanted to share her story in a nice setting, rather than just chatting over Zoom. So I'm really looking forward to that one. And I will be speaking to some midwives as well, mainly about the reason why they went into midwifery, and also speaking about some of the highlights of their careers to date. So I'm really looking forward to that. It's going to be a really safe environment. It's not really going to be like, we're not going to be talking about medical stuff. It's just going to be a morning to chat about birth, at the beauty of it and how it can unfold for different people. So on to this week. So sorry, I will release tickets for that in July. So if you want me to include you on the subscription list to hear more about it, send me a DM and I'll include your email on that list. So to move on to this week's guest, Jennifer shares her one pregnancy and the birth of her little boy, Jimmy. So Jennifer moved back from Australia at about 6 months pregnant. She talks about they bought a house, they were moving into a house, she was staying with her parents-in-law at the time, so it was a bit of a tough time trying to manage everything and then preparing to welcome her baby into the world. She was induced at 37 weeks. They thought her baby was quite small. They broke her waters and at this stage they realized there was cord prolapse. So Jennifer was rushed down to have an emergency cesarean birth under general anesthetic. So a lot went on in a really short space of time and a lot for anyone to process. So her little boy Jimmy was in hospital for 10 days and she was in hospital for a week. So she talks me through all of that, all of the emotions surrounding that, how she has processed what she went through. And something I think that has stuck with me from our conversation is how she felt after waking up from the general anaesthetic. And I'm sure a lot of you can relate to that. Jennifer is also studying hypnobirthing. She's just recently qualified, sorry. So I have tagged her page in the show notes here. So go over and have a look at her page if you want to ask her any questions as well, which she said she is more than happy to answer. So thank you, Jennifer, for sharing your story. And I will chat to you all next week with a new episode. Jennifer, you are very welcome to the Ireland's Birth Stories podcast.
Hey, nice to be here. Thank you.
Yeah. Not at all. I'm delighted to chat to you tonight. Thanks for your patience last night. I know we had to change schedules, but I think tonight is the right night to have this conversation.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah.
So do you want to just give us a little introduction to you and your family?
So I'm Jen. I'm living over in Walkinstown. I'm originally from Finglas. Myself and Peter are here in Walkinstown with our one and a half. He's just one and a half now. Your old boy, Jimmy. We're only here since Jimmy is born. We came back from Australia just when I was, how long was I pregnant? 6 months.
Okay.
From Australia, 6 months pregnant in 2020. So that was a lot, but we got there.
My aunt is in Walkinstown, and every time I drive, I'm like, no, I don't need to put it into sat nav. I know which turn to take. And honestly, like, I'm in and out, like going back on myself constantly. I'm brutal.
Big area as well, though. I'm kind of more of the crumbling end of Walkinstown, with that roundabout.
That roundabout, yeah. And I think I have it nailed. I'm like, no, it's not going to defeat me. I'm going to do it. No, every time it gets me.
The road, I have to go to, like, I don't know how many different traffic lights I go by.
Yeah. So let's talk about your pregnancy.
Yeah. Okay. So I found out I was pregnant in, it was April 2020. It wasn't planned, but it wasn't, I don't really know if it was unplanned either, but I came off the pill probably, it was Christmas 2019, just for personal reasons. I was like, look, it's not working anyways at this stage. It was kind of, I was up and down, like, I was just on it that long, and I was kind of saying to myself, oh God, well, what if, like, you know, what if you get pregnant? Because I was in Australia. We were just kind of messing about, you know, like, we weren't really serious trying to look for careers or anything over there. And I was like, well, what if it happens? And I was like, look, if it happens, it happens, but it won't. But it did very, very quickly. So, we found out in April 2020. I didn't really know what to do over there. Like, it was never something. I suppose I was very naive. I was just like, what do? Do I go to a doctor? So we went over to a doctor there. They just kind of gave us a roundabout kind of due date. I think they told me it was like the end of December I would have been due. I knew I wasn't going to stay. We kind of, because it was the very, very start of COVID, we kind of said, look, we're going to go home. I hadn't got a job then at that time. My job had closed down. I was working in an office at the time, and they had closed down. So it wasn't looking very likely that we were going to get our jobs back around like that. So we kind of decided to come home, but didn't know when we were going to come home. So I was doing the healthcare over there.
Okay.
For till August. I'm kind of gone blank here.
So what does it look like over there? So do you go in for like a 12-week scan, and do you see your GP?
I've done an early scan as well, because I had a bit of bleeding as well. I've done an early scan, and everything was fine. They just said that can happen. It's pretty normal, but, you know, it doesn't look anyway serious. So, yeah, we've done a 12-week scan, and then they kind of just left me from there. There wasn't a whole lot going on. I was doing a couple of doctor's appointments, but nothing major. And then I think because they knew I was going home, they
were
kind of go from there, like, when I got home. But I ended up doing the 20-week scan there, because by the time I got home, quarantined, done the whole isolation for 2 weeks, then got kind of registered with a hospital here. It would have been like 25 weeks or so.
Okay.
But so I ended up doing a 20-week scan there. Found out that I was having a boy. And then I think then it was like the 24th week I came home here. And pregnancy was all fine. I'm just after thinking of something there now as well. Before I found out I was pregnant, I had to go and get a lump checked in, I think it was the right breast. And then they said, look, it's fine for now. Then I had found out I was pregnant. I rang that professor that I was speaking to, and she said, look, because you're pregnant now, just wait until after you have your baby to do biopsy. She said, there's no point in doing it now. Wait till afterwards. Then you can do the biopsy. So I explained that then when I got back to Dublin. They said, no, you shouldn't have waited. I had to do a biopsy then while I was still pregnant. That was around 30 weeks.
Okay.
In the Mater breast clinic. So then I was being checked. I was being monitored then every week. You know, if you kind of have a special circumstance, mm-hmm. no matter what it is, they kind of bring you in then weekly just to kind of monitor the baby, monitor everything else. I got the all clear from the biopsy. I suppose when I got back here then, it was all kind of go then because I was in every week rather than going down to a doctor, say every couple of weeks you go then towards the end of pregnancy.
And how did you feel? Were your anxiety levels heightened? Because you had a lot going on. You just moved back. You then had to...
It really was at the time. I was taking it easy kind of until I got home because then myself and Peter moved into this house. But we were redoing the whole house. It was an old build. We needed to get new electricity. We needed to get new plumbing. But me and Peter had it in our head that we were going to be like in a new home by the time Jimmy was born.
Okay.
Yeah, okay.
Room to improve and turbo.
And he's here like in this room ripping down ceilings.
Oh my God,
we're not going to be in there. So then we had to move around to Peter's mum's then. That was around the start of October. And Peter was still optimistic. He was like, no, we'll be in. And I was like, I'm kind of having my doubts now. So that's when I kind of started getting very panicky. I was like, I just use your breathing techniques and all of that now. I was kind of doing a little bit of hypnobirthing.
Okay.
Looking back now, I done like a smidgen to what I know what it is now. I had done a little day course, and then I had read a book, then I had done affirmations, all that kind of looked up a lot, but I never done the full course with an instructor. I think it was more so because it was all over Zoom and I wanted Peter there, but he was here working in the house. So looking back now, I should have done a lot more study in it as well, because there's just so much that you can learn and it's really, really brilliant what they do. But
there is, it can be hard to know where to start though and what's right for you, because hypnobirthing isn't necessarily right for everyone.
So what am I up to now?
So up at the 30 week mark. So did you do anything else, like physically? Did you do yoga or did you do anything to kind of, sure, you were probably on the go all the time.
But I would have rather do all that stuff in person. Like,
yeah,
I was doing all the antenatal classes online. It would have been so much better doing it in person and say with Peter as well. He was kind of coming in the evening time when I was around in his mum's and he was trying to catch up on what I was doing. But sure, then I was like, knackered and I just kind of wanted to go to sleep then at that time.
Yeah.
Like, right, I've done my bit. But I don't know, because everything was so closed off at the time. It's weird thinking about it now because I was like, why didn't I do that? Why didn't I? And I was like, oh yeah, because it was kind of all shut down. Like there was nothing you could really do, you know?
Yeah. So when did things with the house, did you get the house ready in time?
No.
No, okay.
But we did move in Christmas Eve. That was
okay.
Weeks after Jimmy was born. But God, I was going to say something there now and I forget what it was. Oh yeah, it kind of all started to kind of go. Like, a lot of people were telling me, "Oh, you're still really small for the say for the week you are," and yeah. I don't know. Like I was just a bump, you know. And then even I went to. I can't remember what week it was, but it was pretty late on. I'd say it was around 45 weeks. And my doctor said, oh, like you're measuring quite small. I'm going to send you in for a growth scan. Now, I didn't know, is growth scan, is that a special kind of thing you have or does everybody get one?
Not everyone gets one.
Right.
But there's not a lot. They're not that precise the further on your pregnancy.
Yeah. So then when I went in for the growth scan, the midwife had said, like, oh, it's all looking okay to me. And I said, oh, okay, because the doctor had mentioned about induction. And I think I kind of just skipped that whole part because I, in my head, I was like, I'm not doing that. I'm not going to have an induction. Like, it'll all be natural. I was kind of going, I'm not even going to have, I was trying to say, like, I wouldn't have any kind of drugs, pain relief. I'll do it all myself. But I don't know. When you look back and all that kind of thing, you're like, but then I got the results of this growth scan. He was measuring quite small. And I was actually brought into the hospital when they gave me the results of the growth scan. And do you call her a midwife? One that kind of just sees you on a normal like nurse. So she said, look, we're probably going to look at induction tomorrow. I was like, what? And this was then 37 weeks. And I was like, no, I need time to think about this. I kind of just went from 0 to 100. So he was measuring too small. She said he's only about 5 pounds, but I don't know, to me, in the last couple of weeks, a baby puts on like a lot of weight in the last couple of weeks. So I don't know. And even anybody that I asked, they said, yeah, 5 pounds, it would be kind of an okay weight, I suppose. It's not an unhealthy weight, I suppose. But I remember she says to me, if you carry on, his head will continue to get bigger and his body won't. And she was quite condescending. Like, she was saying, well, you could be looking at a stillbirth if you don't do this. And I was like, oh, geez, okay. You know, so then that was like panic set in. And I was like, well, if I don't do it, I'm the worst. You know, I'm causing risk. And well, because I was after being kind of looking at a couple of things with hypnobirthing, I was like, oh, God, this is what they kind of tell you to look out for and ask this and ask that. So I asked all the questions. I was saying, like, look, what's the risks and whatever. Now, they obviously said, like, you could be looking at a stillbirth. They were saying, no, we wouldn't advise you to just wait it out, because obviously I was still in Peter's mom. So I was like, we're in a small little room. I didn't want to be going back to the house with Jimmy living in the room. I kind of wanted to wait it out and get into our house and kind of have our house and all done. But I ended up doing the induction. It wasn't the next day, though. I said, look, I'm going to have a day or so to think about it, and I'll ring you back and I'll see if I want to do it or not. So I rang the next day. I asked a couple of more questions. I can't even remember now what the questions were. But then even when I went, so that was, I think that was a Thursday. I went in on the Saturday. That was Saturday the 5th of December. And I went in Saturday morning at like 8 o'clock in the morning. I was quite worried then, because I remember like the Friday night before I went in, I was up all night like crying, and I was like, I feel like something was going to go wrong. And I don't know, maybe that's just me kind of looking at things very negatively, I suppose. But I was just like, I can see just ending bad. And I was like, and Peter was saying to me, like, well, what do you think is going to go wrong? Like, what do you think is going to happen? I was like, I just think I'm going to have a section, and I didn't want the section. Now, again, looking back in hindsight, a section isn't the worst thing in the world. It's nothing to be scared about. It's nothing to be ashamed about, anything like that. But yeah, so I was awake all night. I went in Saturday morning. They told me to be there at 7, and I was waiting down there till about 8. I was waiting in the reception till about 8 o'clock for somebody to come down. And I went up to the ward, and I was still saying when I went up to the ward, look, I don't know if I'm going to stay here. And they were kind of laughing at me, going, no, if you're in, you're in, like, you're staying here. And I was like, wait, just give me a couple of more minutes.
And so you must have felt considering that you hadn't slept all night and you were really nervous about going in, saying goodbye to Peter must have been really hard then.
Because that's another thing I asked when I went in for the appointment the couple of days before. I said, I asked everything really about the induction, what way it was going to go, what they do. And I was saying, can Peter be there with me? And she said, no, look. She actually said, no matter what, even if it wasn't COVID and restricted visiting, your partner would still only be allowed in visiting hours. But just that visiting hours at the time were restricted. I think it was only about 2 hours, I think, at the time. So it was from four to seven, 3 hours at the time. So that was for 4 p.m. to 7 p.m. So I was there from 7 till like about 4 o'clock on my own. So they'd done the I was waiting there, and then she talked me through what she was going to do. It was like, a pessary, I think it's called. I get mixed up with all the medical terms. So it was a pessary. So she put that in. She said, you might feel a little bit of pain kind of in a couple of minutes, but it's all normal. It's not too bad. The pain, it's kind of just like a period pain. So she put it in, and straight away, like, I got really hot. I started to sweat, and I was like, oh my God, this is bad. This is hurting me. And she's like, no, it's fine. And I said, no, I've passed out in a couple of other times. Like, I don't know, I've got like a low iron or something like that. And I said, I was lying down on the bed, and I said, I think I'm going to pass out. And she said, no, you're fine. And then with that, I passed out. So I remember waking up, I was like, pumping sweat. There was a couple of nurses around. They were like, yeah, okay. And I was like, get it out, like, I don't want it in, it's killing me. And she said, no, you just kind of had a reaction to it, you'll be fine. Then I vomited, and then I kind of calmed down, and I had a glass of water or whatever, and I was sitting there, and I still said, this is still really, really painful. Are you sure I'm not having some sort of reaction to it? Like, I didn't know. I thought I was like allergic or something. I didn't know. So
when you say painful, was it like period pains, or was it like a constant pain, or was it like, did it feel like contractions?
Pain in my stomach, pain in my back. And then I just, like a kind of a rush then. And then I was sweating and really hot. I can't even describe the pain now because I can't even remember it. But yeah, I just remember stomach and back, and lower stomach too. Like way worse than a period pain. So it was left in anyways, and I was like, okay, fine, just kind of get through it. Then it did kind of wear off, I suppose, but I could still feel it. I could feel it kind of all day then in my bum. And then the midwife said, yeah, that's known to happen. It's probably just pressure kind of in your bum. And then all day, it did fly by for the amount of time I was there without Peter. And then I was just kind of on my phone. I was watching a couple of films, listening to the affirmations. I had a playlist. I done out a playlist. I was listening to that. And then I was kind of saying, right, these pains, like, they were pretty painful, I suppose, but they just kept telling me that they were normal. So I was like, okay. Peter got there and that was fine. He stayed for a couple of hours. We just, we were just sitting there. Like, you couldn't really do anything. Now, we were just sitting in a ward as well with other women. So other women were coming and going. And I didn't know what was going on because it was my first time being pregnant, first time ever going into labour. There was like women beside me screaming, and it was like, it's not something that you want when you're trying to prepare yourself, I suppose. I mean, like, I was glad. I was like, yeah, let it out. So they were kind of being carted off, and that was that. That was kind of going on through the whole day. Then Peter had to go. That was about 9 o'clock. I was just kind of sitting there. I was kind of like, oh, I just want them back. I wanted to kind of get things going because I just wanted somebody familiar there with me. It was such a, looking back now, because I'm studying hypnobirthing, and I'm going, oh yeah, no wonder you felt like that, because like it was a bright environment to be in. It wasn't familiar. You were kind of just, you know, I was being monitored as well every so often.
Okay.
You were kind of restricted. Like, I wanted to have, like, say, a shower or a bath, but I don't know, it just felt a little bit uncomfortable, because we had to kind of go down the hall. It was like a pub, there was a shower, but it was like in a big kind of communal area. Then it kind of got to midnight, and through those early hours, the midwife was coming in, kind of checking up on me, and she just, because I didn't really familiarize myself with induction and kind of the drugs that you'd be given. Yeah, that's going to go off. I didn't know if that was going to go off that beeping. I didn't familiarize myself with kind of like stuff that you'd be asked to take. And then the pain was kind of getting to me that much. And yeah, I was on my own. So I didn't have anybody to make a decision for me, because they say like you can give your birth partner, they kind of take over the role of decision making and whatever, things like that. She just offered me, what's that one called? The petidine. I think she put it in my bum. And yeah, the pain went away. I was able to sleep for about 3 hours or so. She examined me, I think, once before that. And, you know, you think because the pain is that excruciating, the pain is that intense, you think, oh my God, like I'm well on now, I'm going to be like 5 centimeters or so. She was like, here, you're 1 centimeter. I was like, what? And she's like, oh, what's wrong? And she goes like, Jen, if you consider, now, this will always, always stick with me. She said, if you consider what way your cervix was before, it was long, hard, now it's short, it's soft, it's red. She goes, it's after doing lots of work, like, you know, give yourself a bit of credit. And I was like, oh, okay. So she says, like, that's one of the hardest parts, like, done. So then after the petidine, I was 3 centimeters, I think. Yeah, I was 3. But even still, like, you know, you kind of feel a bit hard done by. You're like, oh my God, I thought I'd be well on by now. But then she said, look, I can. That was another thing. I was like, I wanted to just let everything kind of happen naturally. But then at this stage, I was like, I don't think anything's going to happen naturally at this stage, so just go with it. She said, I can break your waters. And I was like, oh, I didn't really want to do that. And she said, why? I said, I just didn't. And she said, but then Peter will be able to come in. So they kind of dress it up in this kind of nice. And I was like, well, then if Peter can come in, do it, let's do it. Like, she said, you can go to the birth suite and, you know, we can call Peter. She said, you can call Peter and all there beforehand. So I was like, great, do it.
So out of my 2 children, Eva is naturally the most curious. She's in at everything. She wants to see what's in every press. She wants to see how every toy works. Is just into everything. And although it's just a new way of parenting that I didn't have with Oliver, I just had to be prepared for this child who needs constantly, who's being stimulated constantly. So say hello to Brain Building with PandaCrate. It's exactly what I needed. It's a subscription service for play essentials designed just for babies and toddlers aged 0 to 24 months. It's created by play experts at KiwiCo in partnership with Seattle Children's Hospital. PandaCrate is thoughtfully designed with care to stimulate your baby's brain development through play. PandaCrate is a science-backed, research-based approach to play and recognises that there's more to babyhood than the milestones itself. So within the PandaCrate, there was lacing beads. So Eva can sit down and do something like a jigsaw, but she'll have it done really quickly. And with the lacing beads, it takes her just a couple of minutes and she has to use both hands, so she can really explore each piece, thread the shapes onto a string and develop bilateral coordination. Really, really handy. And also there's a peg puzzle, so it's another way to solve shapes, and it's nice, they're nice wooden robust toys, they're easy to clean, nice solid shapes. And I find the other toys that you put, for her anyway, to put say a block into something is far too easy, so the peg puzzle was just really handy. It challenged her a little bit more than the others. Whether you're a first-time parent or not, PandaCrate provides a way to simplify the early years with just right products to support your baby's rapid development in the first 2 years of life. Countless hours go into creating the playthings in this box. KiwiCo designers ideate, iterate and prototype, test, review and revise, and then they do it all again. So every material, colour, angle and curve is a thoughtful choice designed to stimulate your baby's brain development through play. And as I mentioned before, you can really see that in, especially with the pieces in the Peg puzzle. Unlock brain building play and create a foundation for early learning with PandaCrate from KiwiCo. Get 30% off your first month plus free shipping with code IOREBIRTH at kiwico.com. That's 30% off your first month at kiwico.com with promo code IOREBIRTH. On to the rest of this week's episode.
So when she broke the waters, people say, oh, it's never a gush, it's never this, that. This was... And the midwife explained as a tsunami, okay? I was lying in the bed and I was just remember a puddle all around me. I had my phone. And whichever way, I must have dropped my phone. My phone was floating. I grabbed the phone, put it on the table, and she was like, oh my God. Even she was shocked. She explained it to me later on, like the next day, as a tsunami. She was like, never seen that amount of water. So she said, this is when it all kind of turned pear-shaped. She said, oh, right. So they were monitoring me then as well. At this stage, she had that monitor thing on my belly for the heartbeat. So she said, oh, this is another thing. It always just sticks in your brain. She's like, oh, the baby didn't like that. Go on your side. Another thing, actually, I had the gas and air at the time because I said, oh, I don't know if breaking the waters is going to hurt. She said, I'll give you gas and air. I said, right. Okay. So I had the gas and air. And I think when I took a hit of that, it didn't really faze me when she said the baby didn't like that. Turn on your... So I was just like this, fine. Like, what's going on? I didn't really... I was kind of a bit, well, I don't know, airy-fairy. So...
One size fits all seems like a good idea for clothes until you try them on. Same goes for healthcare. That's why United Healthcare offers flexible, budget-friendly coverage for medical, vision, dental, and more. Learn more at uh1.com.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Quality sleep is essential. That's why the Sleep Number Smart Bed is designed for your ever-evolving sleep needs. Need a bed that's firmer or softer on either side? Helps you sleep at a comfortable temperature? Sleep Number smart beds let you individualize your comfort, so you sleep better together. JD Power ranks Sleep Number number one in customer satisfaction with mattresses purchased in-store. And now, save 50% on the Sleep Number limited edition smart bed for a limited time. For JD Power 2023 award information, visit jdpower.com/awards. Only at a Sleep Number store or sleepnumber.com.
Life is full of what-ifs, some awesome, like what if AI could fold your laundry? And some, well, less awesome, like what if you have unexpected medical costs? UnitedHealthcare can help get you covered with Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans. They supplement your primary plan to help you manage out-of-pocket costs. No deductibles, no enrollment periods, and especially no more what-ifs. Visit uh1.com to find the Health Protector Guard plan for you.
An alarm went off. She was calling people in. She was like, kind of started to, I don't know, shout a little bit. She was like, on your side, on all fours. I didn't know what was going on at this stage. I think the gas and air wore off.
Were you still having surges all throughout this?
Yeah. I said, look, I'm probably shouldn't have been doing this either. I said, I'm timing contractions here. But she kind of, I don't know, glazed over that and just said, no, like they were consistent though. I always said it, I was like, they're consistent. But because I was induced, they say they are kind of, some of them can be consistent and they'll be more intense than, say, a surge that wasn't in induction. So I don't know. I don't think I was in actual active labour either. It was probably just being induced and you were a little bit more intense. So then I just remember I was back on my back. She put her hand up and the pain was excruciating. I was like, I screamed. I was screaming the place out. And this was still women all over the ward. And I was like, effing every course going. I probably called her a couple of names. I was like, stop it. Get away from me. Like, get away. And there was this people coming into the room still at this time, and she was like, Jen, I have to do this. I still didn't know what was going on. She was kind of going, look, I have to do this, like, it's an emergency or whatever. So while she was stopped, another person had a go, put their hand up, and I was still going, why has everybody got their hands up my vagina at this stage? Then they brought in a wheelie bed, told me to get on all fours there. I was carted off out of the ward down the corridor with a person with their hand up. So I'll explain now. So what it was a cord prolapse at the time. Hadn't got a clue what it was looking it up. So it's when it can happen when there's obviously there's a kind of a thing called too much waters, which probably was from why it happened to me. It can happen when there's an artificial rupture of the membrane, which was breaking the waters. But it's very rare. Like, yeah. It happened one in 500 births. So, yeah, very rare. Like, I don't want to be scaring anybody here, that I was kind of reluctant to actually come on and even then talk about it. But so it's when the cord slips through, forced, and the cord gets kind of squashed either by the baby's head, something like that, and stops oxygen going to the brain and can cause brain damage, stillbirth. I think that's it. It can cause either one of them. So yeah, that's why the reason the midwives had their hand up was to push Jimmy's head back up to release the cord.
Okay.
So I was being wheeled down and they were like, right, theatre. That's all I heard. And I was like, fuck, this is going to be a section.
And I was like, and you were still contracting throughout all of this on all fours.
Yeah. And it was just so painful because they had their hands up there. And I was like, I don't know. I just don't know what I thought was going on. I thought I was being split in two or something. I don't know. Anyway, we got into theatre. They said, look, Jen, do you consent to a section? Still, they still didn't kind of say this is why. And I understand why they didn't. But what was going on in my brain is like, what is going on here? I remember saying, is this actually happening? And they were just like, do you consent? I said, yeah. Now, I didn't realise, I had made a birth plan as well to say, look, if this goes ahead, a section, I don't want to have the curtain up. I want to see what's going on and stuff. I wasn't afraid of a section. I was like, but if it does happen, I still want to see everything that's going on. Then, I don't remember them saying, but I'm sure they did. And I kind of just went, yeah. There was like 8 different doctors around running in and out, whatever. Then, so they obviously put a mask on and that was for general anaesthetic. I didn't know. I must have known. I must have said, yeah, that's okay. So I just remember then waking up. I woke up. There was a doctor there and I was like, what the hell is happening here? He said, do you know what happened? And I said, no. I was like, sorry, before all that, I was kind of saying, get Peter, I want Peter. And I think they were going like, no time for Peter, like, you know. So I think somebody did ring him, because then when I did wake up, I was like, where's Peter? I kind of went like that and felt my belly, and I was like, it's kind of flat. And like, I was like, where, what's going on? You know, because you're still kind of coming around from the general anesthetic and whatever else they put in me. But they said, Peter's going to come in now. Your baby is in the NICU. So that's when they explained kind of cord prolapse, all that business. And I was like, okay. I was like, is he going to be all right? And they were saying, yeah, look, it's really positive. Just we're going to kind of get you out of here. You'll see Peter and get you into your own room, and whoever else will be up with you then. So then we got wheeled into our own room. It was nice because Peter was able to actually stay there. I know at one point when we were being wheeled down to the room, they said, you're going to have to. He was there for like, 3 minutes. And they said, you're going to have to go because you're not allowed here. Peter said, I'm not going anywhere. Like, I'm not leaving. I'm not going. And one of the other nurses just said, no, look, let him into the room. Like, they haven't got a clue what's going on. So we were in that room. I think it was like, at that point, it was probably 6 o'clock in the morning. This all happened at about 4 in the morning. And Jimmy was actually born at 44 minutes to 5. So he was born at like 4:44 in the morning. And I was like, that's a nice little angel number if you're into all that kind of thing. So I gathered then afterwards, the nurse had told me that from having me waters broke to when Jimmy was born, they'd done all that in like, I think she said 12 minutes. That's like pretty spectacular. It's amazing how quickly they can do it and, I mean, save a life. Because if it had been any longer, geez, God knows what would have happened. But anyway, the professor came in, she explained everything. She said, look, we were actually not going to put him in the NICU. They do this thing called, there's a proper word for it, but it's kind of like a cooling. They put a little cooling suit on the baby. So that kind of cools everything down. It kind of, I suppose, freezes his brain to stop any brain damage. He was doing really well. She goes, we weren't even going to do this, but we're just doing it as a precautionary. So that kind of gave me a bit of comfort as well. But, you know, I was kind of still thinking, oh God, what if this happens? What if that happens? I said, is he okay? And she's like, he's fine. You can go up and see him soon. She said, just when you're kind of a bit more, because I was in and out of sleep as well. I was kind of going, I was waking up and I was going, oh my God, I fell back asleep. But Peter was still there by my side. Like, he was saying, yeah, it's all right. Like, you can fall asleep whenever. But they said, did Peter want to go up and see him? I said, you go up and see him if you want to. I said, I can go up soon. I was like, you go up and see him. I'd rather somebody be with him now. Like, so he went up, took a couple of pictures and sent them to me. He was all like, you know, covered up in that suit, the tubes and all that kind of business on him. So like, it's upsetting to see your baby like that, you know what I mean, when you kind of had this kind of thought in your head, like, of, I don't know, I was so naive, a natural birth, you know, he's going to have that golden hour, he's going to be on me, all that business. And it was just kind of taken, you know, all in a second. But yeah, he was there. He was there for 8 days. No, 10 days. He was there for 10 days. But, you know, it was the first couple of days were hard because we weren't allowed to take him out. He had to be cooled for 72 hours, then warmed back up gradually for, I think it was 14 hours, then they warm him back up. I say that as if he was freezing. He wasn't like freezing cold when we were touching him. I was able to put my hand in and touch him, but I just wasn't able to take him out. So then he was in the kind of, I don't know, what do you say, the more serious kind of part of NICU, and then taken out to the other part where there wasn't as many wires and stuff on him. So he was taken out there, and then that's when we were able to hold him. Sorry, he went over to, he actually left the hospital before I did. He went over to Hollistry for an MRI on his brain, and that all came back. The day I was able to hold him and feed him. They actually gave me the news. They said that scan came back. Everything's fine. Like, so it was so, like, brilliant. Like, I can't tell you how happy I was to hear all that. And then when he was actually in my arms, it just all felt real. I was like, oh, yeah, so, like, he's mine. It was weird. I don't know brilliant. If anybody else maybe that's listening. When you have a C-section and you're under the general anaesthetic, like, before that, you're pregnant. When you wake up, yeah. Your baby isn't there. I kind of felt, I think for a good couple of weeks after, I kind of felt like I was still pregnant. I don't know. Like, I was still going off the same foods. It was just certain things that I still felt like. I was like, this is weird, because there was kind of like that disconnect. You know that way? So, yeah. Then breastfeed. I did want to try breastfeed, and I said, I'll give it a go. I don't know. I was like, because you weren't able to do kind of the proper classes, it was kind of hard to understand what was going to happen. So I was expressing while I was still on the ward. I was on the ward with other women that kind of had their babies in the NICU as well. And that was, it's nice to have other people there, but it's still difficult when you're in a baby hospital, kind of like, and there's no babies on the ward. Now, in fairness, Peter, when I had just woke up and we were going to be moved into a ward, Peter said, is she going to be in a ward with all other babies? And they were like, no, we're not. That's cruel. Like, you couldn't do that to her. So I was trying to express while I was down on the ward. But, like, to breastfeed and have that milk supply come in, you have to be holding your baby. You have to have that skin to skin. Like, it was near impossible to deal with. Then the amount of drugs that I was taking, they were putting like shots into my leg for blood clots, to prevent blood clots. You were getting like painkillers every couple of hours. So looking back, like, at the time I was really hard on myself, saying, why isn't it open? Looking back now, I'm like, was it ever going to work? Like, how could I have done that when I didn't hold you me till like day three, day four? So that was kind of a no-go. And then the nurse actually up in the NICU said, look, we're going to try him with a little bit of formula. Do you mind? Because you're not really expressing a lot. Like, I was still getting that little 1 mil, you know, those little syringes that they give you. I was still getting day three, and they were going, like, that's just not enough for him. So I said, yeah, just give him the formula. I don't mind. Like, I was kind of open to it beforehand anyways.
So can I ask how you felt? Like, that's...
It was crazy. I'm going to take...
Yeah. Because there's loads to process there, even as a, like, as someone who's listening to your story.
I just remember then that evening, I said to Peter, like, I can't think of what happened. And he said, what do you mean? I goes, like, I cringe. You know, like when you get, I don't know, like a secondhand embarrassment for someone. It was that feeling. I was like, oh, I feel embarrassed. He said, what do you mean? I goes, I don't know. It's a horrible feeling that I'm getting when I think of what happened. And he was like, yeah, because, like, it was whatever. Like, look what happened to you. It was bloody traumatic or whatever.
Yeah.
And I was like, oh, right. So, and then the nurse the midwife that broke the water came in that evening to me, and she was like, Jen. And I was looking at her going, I know who we're facing. And I went, oh my God, it's you. And I said, I broke down. I just said, I'm so sorry. And she goes, what have you got to be sorry for? And
yeah.
I was like, I don't know. It goes for screaming. And I goes, those are the people on the ward must have been like shocked. I goes, like, I was trying to, like, you're trying to be all relaxed and stuff, and there's me, like, screaming at the top of my lungs and whatever. She goes, no, like, Jen, you don't find. She goes, the girls didn't even realise. One of them said, she goes, she was asleep. She goes, she thought she was dreaming. I said, oh, okay, fine. So, yeah, like, those days were, like, they were the hardest thing I think I've ever done, ever. Like, but you just kind of get through it. I don't know, like, because you have a baby there that's counting on you, I suppose, you're just like, you have to get through it, like. And then with Peter as well, it's just good to kind of be there for each other as well.
And when did you go home?
I was there from Saturday the 5th. I left the Saturday after, And that was kind of putting up a fight as well, because they wanted me to go, I think it was the Thursday or Friday. And I was like, I don't want to, I'm not going without Jimmy. Like, I was like, I'm not leaving. And they said, look, we have to, you have to go home. But the ward wasn't busy that I was in. It was me and another girl then at by then. And I was like, but it's not busy. I need to stay here. Goes, because at the time then, so Jimmy could come out of the incubator that he was in. And I was kind of doing a little bit of breastfeeding, and he was latching. He was latching good, but to this day, I actually don't know if he was getting much milk. But I just know that if he was with me, it would have worked. Because expressing just wasn't working for me. I was hand expressing.
It's hard work.
I was sweating, and it was just awful. You're in, again, unfamiliar surroundings. There's nurses coming in and out constantly checking on you, and you've got a boob out. You're like, Jesus, I just need a bit of peace, you know. So that was another thing. I was like, he's feeding while I'm breastfeeding. I said, so can I not just stay? Because when he was using the bottle, he was spitting it all back up as well, because he was being fed through a tube for the first couple of days. They said, oh, he's not going to get the hang of a bottle for a couple of days. So I was worried leaving him. I was like, oh God, he's going to be spitting up in the incubator. Nobody's going to be looking at him. What if this happens? What if that happens? So anxiety was very high when I was leaving. So I had to go a week later. That was the full 7 days that I stayed in there. But when I was leaving, they said, look, he's not going to be here too long after you. Like, he's doing really well. Just, you know, we'd be out a couple of days after. So that kind of kept me going as well. Trying to think of...
You probably went home to a house full of cards and...
Yeah, I did. Like, people were dropping me up stuff as well. It was so nice. Like, people were dropping me up, like, little letters, and I picked them on the incubator with Jimmy and stuff. But I went home then to Peter's mum's house, and I was actually still trying to express. And I don't know, again, you're in a kind of a room, and like, Peter's mum was popping her head in, do you want dinner? And I'm like, oh, God's sake.
I know.
So, yeah. And then his dad there as well. I couldn't actually just go, I'm going to pop upstairs or whatever. So that was, yeah, it was just awkward, you know. But, like, I mean, thankful that we had a roof over our heads. Like, it was great, like, to have them there as well. But, yeah, like, I just remember leaving the hospital, and I was angry then at that stage. I was like, no, none of this went the way I wanted it to go. And that's when I kind of just started feeling, I don't know, just so hard done by it. And I was like, and now I have to leave now without me child. Like, I was like, the hardest thing I've ever done. Like, my mum passed away 15 years ago, and I remember saying, I'd happily do that all over again rather than leave the hospital without Jimmy. I was like, it's just an awful thing to have to do, isn't it? For any mother, and even the people that have their babies in there for months, weeks, I don't know how they do it. Go in and out of the hospital every day. There was a woman actually beside me, and she lived down in Kells, and her baby was born, I think he was born 2 months premature. He was tiny. Yeah. But he was doing so well. But she said, oh, we have to leave as well. She actually left the same day as me. And so she was traveling up and down, up and down. And he didn't leave the hospital till like February. And I was like, how did she do it? I just don't know. But yeah, amazing. Like, what we do when we have to, I suppose. And then afterwards, yeah, so Jimmy got out on the Tuesday. After me, so I was gone the Saturday, he got out the Tuesday. And then I even still remember trying to express those couple of nights. I was waking up every 3 hours trying to express, and still nothing was coming out. And I just said, right, I need to be here for him. I can't be stressing about this. It's because I was stressed, like, so stressed. I was like, it's just not gonna work. So when he gets out, I wanted to just give him me full attention. I was like, right, I'm giving up. And I just said, and people were saying to me, oh, do you realise how hard it is to breastfeed anyway, like, without all that you've just gone through? And I was like, no, I was told it was easy. You know, people were going, oh, yeah, the baby just latches on and it's easy. So I was really, really hard on myself about that. And, yeah, looking back now, I was like, just there was no need to be. But he got out on the Tuesday. It was that kind of night. I was told when we went up to visit him that Tuesday morning, they said, like, are you ready to go? Like, he's going to be out today. And the nurse was like, no, but are you ready to go? Like, have you got his thing done? Have you got this done? I was like, I've got that done the last 3 weeks, okay? Now just give me him. I'm ready to go. So, yeah, we got all of our stuff together, like paperwork, whatever you have to do. And, yeah, we left with him. He was happy, healthy. He's still happy and healthy. We just had to go over a couple of things. I think we had to come back then for a checkup. I think it was 3 days later, and then 2 days later to somebody else. But yeah, it was brilliant.
How was the first night at home when you could just like strip down and just be in bed with him? Oh, cool.
Peter's mom. We knocked the door and I said, that car seat is loose. I goes, I needed to put in or whatever, click in, and she goes, "What?" And she today.
That's a good idea.
Whatever. No.
Yeah.
It was still COVID times as well, so you want people to see him, but then I was like, "Oh, this is like rampant here. Like, I can't afford for him to be back in hospital. I don't want people around him." So people were just kind of coming around, having a look at him from the door. And it's horrible. It really was horrible having to do that, because people must have thought I was mad. But
exactly. Yeah. 100%. Yeah.
Even your system and stuff, I was like, no, I just need him. I don't want to be back in the hospital anytime soon. So, we had a nice little... We ended up getting into our house on Christmas Eve. Then Peter was working around the clock. Like, Peter was like, oh, I'll just take today off. And because he was doing most of the work in here, he's like, I'll take today off and we can do something. And I was like, but there's nothing really to do. You're just going to be in the house. I was like, I'd rather you get the house done. As hard as it was, kind of going, oh, like, he's not here to help me. I was like, it'll all be worth it. Like, I wanted him to kind of get it finished.
Yeah.
We moved into the house Christmas Eve. Now, was still like the house was still bare, like there was no sitting room, it was literally a bedroom. But we had heating, electricity, working shower, working toilet, the kitchen was usable. And we went back actually around to Peter's man's then for Christmas dinner. So it all worked out in the end, but it's like we took a detour all the way around to get to where we were. So and then he was doing a little bit of physio as well, but I think that's just, they do that for any child that's been in the NICU. They do it for a year. Right up to a year. So I finished now with Jimmy there in December with physio. And it's just kind of seeing how he reacts to things, how he's kind of moving about, how he's climbing. And yeah, so he's passed all of his kind of tests that he had to pass, and he's a normal little kid now, running around, and
And you, how do you feel that have you done anything to process things a little bit, or kind of
had that same feeling? And I was kind of going, I didn't understand why. And I think when I was looking up stuff about cord prolapse, the word, you know, like birth trauma kept coming up, and I was like, well, what's that? And I kind of googled into that, and a lot of stuff came up for that, and they said, well, these are the symptoms. And you know, it was night time for me, like I'd be awake anyway with feeding Jimmy, but then I'd still kind of go over everything that happened, and I was like, right, you just need to get yourself out of that mind frame. But it's completely normal to feel like that, even after any kind of birth, like whatever you consider trauma, or that kind of left you a little bit anxious. Those kind of things can happen. I did do a debrief with the hospital. They done me 6 weeks later. I found that a waste of time, an absolute waste. They just told me everything I already knew. They just went over a timeline of everything that happened. Now, the thing that I took away from that was, I said to them, they said, well, what are you feeling? I goes, I just wish I didn't take the induction. I said, because I felt like that led to what happened. I said, because the weight he actually was then, he was 6 pounds, 7 ounces, which a fine weight.
Okay.
It's fine. And when a midwife is telling you about a weight, it's a guess. You know, they don't actually know for sure what weight a child is. There's no way of guessing. There's no way of knowing, should I say. So the debrief, yeah, I said, oh, I just wish I didn't do the induction. And they kind of then said, oh, but what if that happened and you weren't in the hospital? You know, like, basically, like, you know, they did save Jimmy's life. But I highly doubt that would have happened if I had just went into birth naturally. Because the stuff that you look up about cord prolapse, they say it's from mainly an artificial rupture of the membrane, and that's kind of usually what it comes from. And yeah, I don't know. It's kind of easy to kind of say, oh, but what if? I'd done another debrief as well with a girl on Instagram. Her name is Illy. I can't think of her second name. Illy something. Her name is Mixing Up Motherhood, and she specializes in birth trauma. She was a wife, and
okay,
she's a hypnobirthing teacher as well, but she kind of does debriefs now for people, and it was brilliant. Like, from when I got off I'd done a Zoom with her too. I just felt a lot lighter. Now, she was just saying, look, it's basically what she tells you is, like, you know, when you do get those feelings of whatever anxiety, like, let them come in, don't fight it. It's all normal, like, to feel like that, feel bad for kind of feeling like that. And, you know, people around you just kind of mention it to them, say, look, there'll be days when I feel like this or that. Pretty good now, because I'm after studying hypnobirthing as well. I just feel like now I can kind of help other people as well, I suppose. And
yeah, I was going to ask, was my next question. Talk to me a bit about that and what your plan is. Yeah, it's really exciting.
February, and I went on a weekend course just 2 weeks ago to get me cert. So I got that cert. I still want to go over.
Congratulations.
I never in a million years would have thought that I'd be doing something like this, like, never. So yeah, there's still so much that you have to learn. Like, I want to go over everything that I learned on that weekend as well before I actually go into actually teaching people for real. One of my friends now is actually pregnant, and she said, do you want to do it on me as a practice? And I right, I said,
yeah, brilliant
practice or whatever. She said, right, like, let's start whenever you're ready to start. So I'm going to start that maybe this week where, and I'll just run through the course with her, see how I get on. So yeah, like, it's just, I feel like you'll never stop learning with such a state.
Yeah, no, you're right.
So
yeah,
many avenues you can go down, and it's just, yeah, it's such a long thing to kind of learn. There's just so much to learn in it.
Yeah.
But
thank you so much for sharing. It's an important story. I haven't spoken to anyone who has suffered cord prolapse, so it's really interesting to hear your story.
I've looked it up, and I don't know many people. There's other things that you can there's like it's called a cord something as well, but that's just when the kind of arm, the baby's arm kind of leans on it, but it doesn't really stop the oxygen.
So I don't have an outro for you for this episode. This week we were chatting and I didn't record the end of our conversation. But I do know that Jennifer is happy for anyone to contact her. So I will link her, I have linked her Instagram page in the show notes if you want to get in touch. She's more than happy for you to reach out with any questions about her story or just to chat in general, as I know she has spoken to other guests on the podcast before. So as always, if you would like to share your story, you're more than welcome to get in touch over the website irelandsbirthstories.ie, which I've linked in the show notes. Click on the share your stories tab and fill out a few details, and I'll get back to you as soon as I can with a recording date. So I hope you all enjoy the week ahead. Chat to you soon.
Even on a budget, quality is non-negotiable. That's why Quince is the place to score high-end essentials at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Get your hands on buttery soft cashmere sweaters from just $60, Italian leather jackets, and so much more. And the best part about Quince, they exclusively partner with factories committed to safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Elevate your style without the elevated price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/upgrade for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Cats and cat owners deserve better than any old-fashioned litter. That's why I teamed up with scientists and veterinarians to create Pretty Litter. Its innovative crystal formula has superior odor control and weighs up to 80% less than clay litter. Pretty Litter even monitors health by changing colors to help detect early signs of potential illness. It's the world's smartest kitty litter.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.